Things down, sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight here on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday. It is the 22nd of February in the year 2006. And I'm hoping that you've had at least peaceful week. Our spiritual message this evening is another one from the Course in Miracles. It's from the workbook, page 118. Nothing outside yourself can save you, and nothing outside yourself can give you peace. Nothing outside yourself can give you peace. That makes all the sense in the world to me, although we don't act like it most of the time, do we? We think because there's something we feel maybe a perceived lack or need or want, or things aren't maybe the way we want them, and that when things are the way we want them, we'll be peaceful. Not the trick, because it isn't a trick, but to find ourselves peaceful within the situation where we are at the present time. Alan Watt is with us tonight, folks. And Alan, thanks again for being here tonight.
Greetings from the frozen north.
Greetings from the... Okay. We're not talking to Santa Claus, right?
No, it's just the guy who chases the minks out his door.
So, how are you, Alan?
Not so bad, really.
Not so bad, we were talking, I guess it was this past week, one evening, and we got to talking about this country, the U.S. of A., and how we were all here. We were all born into this, of course, so we believed it. And no matter what goes on around us, because there are those of us who are waking up to it, but for so long, and you'll still hear people say, well, it might not be the greatest, but it's still the greatest country in the world. It's, you know, we have liberty, we have a constitution. And if you don't like it, if you say anything, then a lot of people will say, well, if you don't like it, why don't you just leave? Mm-hmm. And what we were talking about, Alan, is right from the get-go, the people who came over here. Mm-hmm. And I would like for you to expand upon that tonight, the indentured servants that came over here, Alan.
Yeah.
But it goes, I mean, don't just say, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, first off the bat, it's nothing to do with false teeth. It's a law, you see, that the indentured servants...
It has nothing to do with what?
It's nothing to do with false teeth. You see, it's all to do with these laws that they passed back in Britain when they had the Americas and they wanted to populate it with British subjects. And it's not a state of affair when you can be a serf, which is a slave, really. You're bought and sold with the land. Or you can be charged with a crime. And that's how, basically, they got this thing off the goal. At one time, England only had judges authorized by the High Court to try cases, but they needed a lot more men to do these cases for all the new laws they were going to bring in, because they had to pass laws to make sure that there were enough people or criminals that they could send abroad to populate the Americas. And so everything became a crime. They dumped all the peasants off of their land, their common land that was called, where they could grow their own vegetables, in between working for their masters, and they threw them off their land into the big cities to start up the industrial era, which was planned hundreds of years prior to that. John Dee writes about it in the 1500s.
In the 1500s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did he call it the industrial era?
He talked about an era where technology and machines, he said, would rise and bring Britain up to an empire. He coined the term the British Empire.
Did he?
Which was to be a world empire. Yeah.
Who was John Dee?
Well, he was an advisor to the court of Queen Elizabeth I.
Okay.
And he was also a foreign ambassador to different countries. And he was also a spy for Queen Elizabeth I. And his number was 007.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, seriously, yeah. Yeah, that's how he signed his letters to the Queen, yeah.
007.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, man.
So, you know, everything's in her face. It's just a big joke to the public, and or at least they're laughing at us, because we have no idea of history, and if we have no idea of history, you'll never know how you got to where you are.
Oh, exactly. What is I don't mean to, when I'm not going to,
mm-hmm.
What is a mall over there in Britain? What exactly was a mall? It wasn't a shopping place.
No.
What was it, Alan?
A mall was a type of weapon.
No, because I was reading a book about India.
Uh-huh.
And that was India under the authority of the British East India Company, the government and the company.
Uh-huh.
Some areas it was the British government, and some areas it was the company, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were all one and the same anyway.
Yeah.
But they were talking about a wedding that was taking place, an Indian.
Uh-huh.
And they were on the mall, it said. And
a mall, in that case is the fair way coming into a palace. It's like a long street or driveway. And you get to see them in London with Pall Mall, they call it.
Yeah, Pall Mall. We had Pall Mall cigarettes here.
That's right.
And I thought about that when I read that. Okay, now they call over here, we have shopping malls.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A strip. That strip is really the... So it'd be a strip of land, but it used to be a street, really, leading to a palace or whatever, you know. Yeah.
So in the 1500s, John Dee talked about the industrial era.
Yeah, that's when they burst out with Rosicrucianism. The sort of precursor, and it's still the high Freemasonry in a sense, and they talked about he coined the term and gave it to the Queen to call it the Brightish, B-R-Y-T-I-S-H, Brightish Empire, and he said this will stretch across the world, and of course it was to be exactly what it is. It's to be a world run by an elite, a dominant minority with the money and the power and the hereditary lineages, and then a scientific elite underneath them, which would basically be the masters of all the peasantry underneath them. So that's pretty well what we have with the United Nations and the Rockefeller, all different foundations that we know. So, he wrote a lot about the coming Brightish Empire.
Was he a Rosicrucianist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what is the difference between Rosicrucian? Rosicrucian is it Rosicrucianism and Zoroastrianism?
Zoroastrianism. Well, Zoroaster was really the precursor of all the religions that we know of, coming out with the idea of the war. There's always a war on the planet between two entities, if you like, or two sides of good and evil. That's different. Again, it's a religion. And in that sense, Rosicrucianism incorporated reason. You hear that coming across through in history, this thing about reason. But it also incorporated the religion that went with it, which was Freemasonry, which is more akin to Hinduism than anything. It's a caste system.
Freemasonry or Rosicrucianism?
Rosicrucian is Freemasonry.
Okay, and Freemasonry is a caste system.
Yes, yeah. Masonry has a thousand names. 1,000 names, but they're all the same. There's only one head to the pyramid, one capstone.
When you say that, are you talking about all the different secret societies?
All of them, yeah.
The blood and skull and bones and...
Yeah, they're only a higher order of the same society, yeah.
They're a higher order?
Oh, yeah. You find if you go... Those in the Ivy League schools, such as Yale and Princeton, and of course in England you've got Cambridge and Oxford. These are traditional old families that go there. And they're really a noble order, so they're a higher order, yeah.
What was the one that Clinton was in? It wasn't Skull and Bones, but there was another one. Kind of the counterpart to Skull and Bones?
Well, he did go to the he was sent off to Oxford in England as a Rhodes Scholar.
I know that.
And there he became initiated into the Oxford Circle, they call it.
There's a name for it, though, except I can't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it had some. It seemed to me it had something to do with dog, but maybe it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm thinking of Dog and Pony Show. Zoroastrianism,
mm-hmm.
Was that Zarathustra, the one that started that?
That's what it's claimed, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And Zoroastrianism is not the same as Rosicrucianism.
No, at least the old Zoroastrianism wasn't, no. The original Zoroastrian religion was really an attempt to explain the incredible differences of happiness and sadness, wealth and poverty, cruelty and love that exists within all humanity. You know, the opposites.
Okay.
And so they came up with this idea of a conflicting war to explain why some people are pretty good people and other ones are just thoroughly evil. You know, and that really was copied down through the ages by the religions that came afterwards, you know? But perverted too, of course.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to these United States,
yeah,
of America,
well, it, yeah.
You made a statement, and I know that was a very broad statement.
Mm-hmm.
You said everything was against the law, so obviously they made a lot of picayune laws.
What they did was, for the first time, they made justices of the peace, because they didn't have enough judges. So they gave lesser members of wealthy families these jobs as justices of the peace.
Is that the same as a magistrate?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And so they didn't have to have any law training at all. And in Britain, you didn't get a trial by jury. You just went up in front of the magistrate or the justice of the peace. And he gave a wink to the charging officer and found you guilty of whatever it was. And then you were indentured, which meant you were in servitude for X amount of years. So you were sold off to the Americas. And whoever bought you from the ship that you arrived on paid a fee to the captain, who took his cut. And then when he went back to England, the captain gave it to the magistrate. What was left? They all took their cuts right along the line.
Uh-huh.
It was a slave trade, of course. And they were white people that were initially sent over. That's where the term redneck came from. Because
initially
they used them in the Caribbean countries. And they used to call them red shanks. Initially, because they had the short breeches without socks, you know, and they'd work in the plantations, and because the sun was on their back, and they'd get the red shanks, the red legs, and then they changed it to redneck.
Okay.
And that's where that term came from.
Now, weren't there people who came over here of their own volition, Alan?
Oh, there are people who did, but that was really later, you know.
Okay, we're talking very early, huh?
Early, right through into the 1700s. I mean, Benjamin Franklin bought his first wife off the ship. She was an indentured servant.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Yeah, many of these guys bought their wives off the ships.
Well, excuse me. I'm not on the radio equipment, so I can't turn a mic down. Also, that book that I read... The interpretation of the Constitution, economic interpretation.
Yeah.
the people that came over here, many people, this would have been later when they wanted to, you know, really begin to settle the open areas. Mm-hmm. And they were promised land, remember, Alan?
Yeah.
Well, the guys that were already here and many of the guys that were in the Constitutional Convention, mm-hmm, were landowners.
Yeah.
And they bought up huge of the greatest, best land.
Uh-huh.
So when these people came over here and they were promised land, the land that they were given was crappy land.
Yeah.
And if they wanted land where they were actually going to be able to farm and really homestead, uh-huh, they had to pay a high price for the land.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then when they, okay, now they're going to go out west,
mm-hmm,
okay, they're going to go out there and get some good land. Well, the land barons just beat them to it. And they got out there and did the same doggone thing out west, Alan.
You sure? Uh-huh. What we're doing, see, this, we're being farmed, you see. We truly are being farmed. Like Charles Fort said, we're being farmed.
What do you mean being farmed?
They farm us up for their wars. Such as in Britain, when the Rothschilds took over, they started a standing army. Before that, they used mercenary troops.
Okay.
So then they brought the Redcoats in with the standing army, with the Bank of England funding it and with the right to tax the people to keep the standing army. And then from then on, it's one war after another. And so they were culling off the population what they thought were the excess, as at the same time those soldiers were winning more land for Britain, for London, really, as they were culling off the soldiers. And, of course, the Rothschild companies were supplying all the armaments and clothing, etc. So it's a business. War is a business for them. But they farm us up to a particular level when they need us, and they also cull us down with disease and so on when they don't need us, or else they export us abroad, you see. And that's the standard technique. It's even in economic books, that's the standard technique that's always been used.
Human capital.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Cattle.
Yeah, and when Rothschild's passed the law, he put the bill forward in Parliament in England. It was called the Corn Laws. And what they did, that allowed the European farmers to dump their grain in Britain. And that put all the smallholders out of Britain. And they had to go into the cities, the new industrial cities, and work 16, 17 hours a day till they died. You know, they dropped.
Wait a minute. Wait, say that again. They allowed them to dump their corn?
Yeah, you see, Britain.
Well, who are we talking about, them?
Well, I said the Rothschild.
No, but, I mean, who was dumping
their
corn?
The European farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were they being paid for it?
Oh, yeah. But they were allowed to dump them at cheap prices. And without tariffs. That was free trade, you might say. Without tariffs and into Britain, and at such cheap prices. It was all orchestrated by the Rothschilds.
Right.
And sure enough, all the farmers were suddenly put out of business, and all the farmhands, and they had to move into the new industrial areas like Manchester, Birmingham, and so on, where they were, you know, paid pennies per week and worked 16, 17 hours a day. The rest were put into the army. There was no other choice. And that was, I think, even Benjamin Franklin, who was an Illuminatus. I mean, he there's no problem about it. He definitely was.
Yes, he was.
But because they're Illuminati, they can tell you the truth. They can tell you both sides of the story, you know. And Franklin did say that industrialization was the worst form of a system he'd ever seen. He said because he'd witnessed the peasants in Britain working 16 hours a day in the factories, walking out of the factories absolutely tired and staggering, without shoes on their feet, and yet he was talking about a shoe factory. They couldn't even afford the shoes they made. That's how poor Great Britain was for the people.
For the people. And that's how poor the people were who came over here.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Because
course, when they started up the indentured servitude,
yeah, and
so many laws that
and even like the Irish came over during the famine. They took right off the boat and throw them into the big factories, the sweatshops.
Sure. And with Ireland, too, that was contrived.
Because
the oddest thing is, and it's the oddest story, it's never made any sense, is that a ship came in from America bound to dock in Ireland and then go on to a port in England. Half its cargo was to be unloaded in Ireland, and that's where the claim in came, the potato fungus or whatever it was. They started killing off the potatoes. However, they dumped the other half of the load in England, and nothing happened there from the same cargo.
Why?
Well, obviously, either somebody introduced something. These guys were scientists back then, too. They did have a lot of knowledge, and you find that from the 1500s. But they wanted to move the Irish out, there's no doubt. And Jonathan Swift, who wrote Gulliver's Travels, and who was a high Freemason, who also, and a little side note here, Jonathan Swift, who was an elitist and very arrogant, he did say that let the Irish eat their own children. That's what he said in Parliament in England.
Oh my God!
This was a loving.
And he meant that literally, didn't he?
Yeah, he hated them. Yeah, and he's talking about the Irish Catholics, of course, and the Masons at that time, at least that branch of them, were against the Catholics. And of course, Swift also, in Gulliver's Travels, wrote a part where Gulliver comes to the island where the horses are very sophisticated and intelligent and aristocratic, and the barbarians are the humans. Now the humans, he coined the term Yahoo. The humans who are barbaric were called Yahoos.
Yahoos.
And that's why you have Yahoo on the internet. It's for the Yahoos. It's a Masonic joke on the people.
Not only that, but you know, in Emmanuel Velikovsky's book, World's in Collision.
Yeah.
I highlighted this because they said that the Earth was like creaking.
Uh huh.
And they termed the sound that it was making as Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the Yahoo search engine.
That's right. And also that's what the cowboys were made to say in the movies as Yahoo, you know.
Oh man.
Because they were the base people, and there was some Masonic mockery, you see. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, getting back to the Irish, people think that the Irish were living on nothing but potatoes. And they don't realize that the big, big farmers that London had made settle in Ireland, the Protestant-type farmers, were the new landlords, basically, had lots of other grains, but the people were not allowed to eat it. And the Catholic Church really helped, because they came in and told them to obey the laws and just starve to death and be good to little citizens, you know.
But while the people were starving over there,
uh-huh.
they still had to tithe. And if they had no money, they brought food.
Yeah, I know. But it was so... those people
were
so
living in luxury,
yeah.
Alan.
I know. And then, of course, they also did the same in Scotland, you know. And this is how they contrive things, because they run all sides of everything. They already had the German bunch in as the King and Queen of England, the Georges. And Prince Charlie, of course, the descendant of the Stuart lineage, was over living with the Jesuits in France and Italy in some cases. And they brought him back for the rebellion in 1745. And so sure enough, he came over to Scotland, and he got just a handful of clans behind him. And he said, we're going to take over London. And sure enough, they fought their way right down to London, just a few clans. And we're only 30 miles from Derby. London was being evacuated by the elite. They thought they'd had it. And then Charlie changed his mind and went back. That's when you know...
Right. He went back where?
To Scotland. So here he was within reach of claiming London.
Oh, man.
And he turns back. He took the men up to the loneliest bog in Scotland, the north of Scotland, and he went to Culloden House, the big mansion that was a few miles away, spent the night there eating and feasting, and in the morning the Scots woke up with the British, the whole British army, with the Scots Lowland regiments too, all lined up with cannon and everything against them, and an April morning with freezing rain in their faces, and they stood there for 4.5 hours solid waiting for the order to charge as they were getting shot down with grape shot.
Oh my God.
And Charlie never told them to charge, and the reason was Charlie had vamoosed.
He had what?
He'd gone. He'd got, he never arrived on the battlefield. He went straight over to the island of Skye, and then they had a ship waiting that took him back to France. But they used that excuse of a rebellion to clear the Highlands of millions of people. And sure enough, that's what they did. In came the redcoats. They cleared the Highlands. They got every dirty little old tub that could float or just about float. And they pressed all these people on, set them off for America, and many of them sunk within sight of the coastline, and the relatives could watch them all going under.
Oh my God!
And this is how they populated America. Yeah, yeah. This is the real history. Yeah.
Oh yes, and then it just goes on and on and on too, because recently I watched a movie. I think it was called Mate One. And it was in Matewan, Virginia. I might be saying the name wrong, but it was the coal miners, Alan.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very well-made movie. And it basically what it showed was the control. They went in there. They took the people off the land. The railroad or the coal companies,
mm-hmm.
and confiscated their land.
Yeah.
And then pressed them into service into the coal mine, and there were 7 and 8 year old children in there.
Yeah.
This was early 1900s, Alan.
Yeah, I know some guys who told me this. They saw it happen.
That's really. Right. Yeah. I remember Tennessee Ernie Ford's song, 16 Tons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It never meant anything to me because we weren't taught this in history. But it was, you know, you load 16 tons and what do you get?
Mm-hmm.
Another day older and deeper in debt.
That's right, because it was company town.
Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
That's right.
And when they hired these people, they lived in company housing,
yeah.
And had to pay rent for it.
And company
their
store.
Tools, even their tools. The company fronted them their tools and took it out of their pay.
Yeah, I know.
Everything. They went on strike. And they finally, in this movie and in this particular situation, and I don't remember the exact date, but they prevailed.
Yeah.
About 5 years later, and this is in the encyclopedia, when it tells about it, 5 years later, same place, they struck again. They went on strike,
mm-hmm.
And the government, the federal government brought troops in,
mm-hmm.
Shot them, Alan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Coal miners working for a private company, and the federal government brought troops in and shot them.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, I've lived for so long with this dream of America in my heart,
mm-hmm.
And this was one of the reasons I did want to talk about this tonight, because it's time we give up the dream. It's never been a dream. It's a nightmare.
That's right.
Yeah. It is truly a nightmare. We're going to have to take a break here. And in about 30 seconds,
mm-hmm.
And then we'll pick this up on the other side of it. Folks, for those of you listening on the Internet, or if you're listening on C-band satellite, Sweet Liberty, and this would be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, because Darren Weeks is on Monday and Tuesday, is listener-sponsored. And if you do appreciate the broadcast and the information that is brought to you, then my... urging you is to help to support the broadcast. And if you are moved to do so, then I would...
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188. Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
All right, we're back, folks. I guess I talked into that break. What I was saying is that if you want to send sponsor donations, please send them direct to WFAR, and you can get a hold of them. I'm going to give you the phone number again. You can get a hold of Nicholas at 559-781-3773, and he can let you know how you can do that. I suppose that you can even do it through PayPal or whatever. I don't use that on the Internet. I want to remind you, too, that there's a website with Alan's information on it. It's linked from sweetliberty.org, but the direct address to his website is cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And Alan has three books. If you haven't, I know I've heard from so many of you, and when you call or when you write, you almost never fail to mention how much you appreciate Alan Watt and the information that is provided. And so the books that he has written, it puts some meat into it. It goes beyond just a conversation, let's put it that way. And when you go into cuttingthroughthematrix.com, you can actually read some excerpts of each of the books. There's three of them, and they're $25 a piece. And you can get his address right there at his website or from sweetliberty.org in the links. Alan?
Yeah?
Anything else you want to say about that, honey?
No, that's pretty well it. In those three books, I could just say that it's a process. I write in a different fashion because I try to involve the reader in a formula that wakes them up as they read rather than just have a dull, boring dates and who said what and who did what, you know.
Right.
That doesn't work. It does not work. We've had this for so long, nothing, you know, it doesn't work. So I hit them with symbols and so on that are used, that are in front of their faces, they don't think about them. I explain them to them and start their minds working for themselves.
Uh-huh.
That's the process of it, you know. It's a technique. Uh-huh.
That's what we have to do, is start thinking for ourselves, isn't it?
Oh, that's it. That's
you know, it sure helps. Mm-hmm. For those of us who do communicate, and of mm-hmm. course you being on the air with us, because a lot of times things are pointed out. It's happened to me so many times, Alan,
mm-hmm.
that you've pointed out something that I wouldn't have even thought about it if you hadn't said it, and then suddenly it's as clear as the nose on your face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's beyond just thinking for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's that the truth has been, so much of the truth has been suppressed,
mm-hmm.
that we've all lived in some little dreamland, thinking it was a dream, and come to find out, like I said, it's been a nightmare, Alan.
Yeah, I always say that you wake up from the dream into the nightmare.
Yeah.
When you realize the reality of what it is all about.
Well, you know, and there's just another thing that was on my mind when we were talking about this situation there in Matewan.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking also, watching that movie, I was thinking about World War One,
mm-hmm.
and the soldiers that fought in World War One were promised a bonus by the U.S. government.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, the Depression hit.
Yeah.
They never got their bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
And they were starving.
Yeah.
Those that survived World War One.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, them, you know, were limbless and crippled and et cetera, and they weren't getting their bonus, so they marched with their families, they took trains, they drove, and they walked
mm-hmm.
to Washington, D.C. to plead with the government to give them their bonuses because they were starving.
Yeah.
And the military came out and shot at them.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, I read quite a bit about it. They were actually camping out in tents.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, Dwight Eisenhower
mm-hmm.
was maybe one of them
yeah.
that was involved in that, General MacArthur.
Uh-huh.
One of those guys gave the orders for the troops to open fire on World War One veterans, Alan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's America, the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Yeah, well, see, that all came from Britain because... this is the difference too. In recent years, really in the last century, they trained Americans to indoctrinate them actually into the tribal system, the tribal emblems, the flag that all the children reciting with the hand over the heart, you know, a Masonic gesture.
Pledging allegiance to a flag.
Yes, and of course that trains you to jump up and hear the brass bands and off you go to war. Whereas in Britain, the people feared the military because the military had always been used on the people at home. That was the big difference. They had always been used on the people back home.
Uh-huh.
They had the Draper's riots in the 1700s and in the 1800s when the big when they started importing the cheaper stuff from India and putting all the cotton mills out of business. They had riots there, and they turned the British military on the people, and had mass shootings in the streets. So Britain was well used to what a uniform meant, you know. See, uniform means one form. When they put on a uniform, they are no longer an individual. They're a robot who is part of the whole.
Well,
kind of like Legion. We are many, but we are one. You know.
Yes. Well, think about this.
Yeah.
They are actually considered. They are considered owned by the government.
They're private, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think about the dog tags. Now, mm-hmm. see, Alan, something just like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard about dog tags forever. It never occurred to me
mm-hmm.
that, you know, a dog tag is tagging around a dog's neck.
It's the dogs of war, you know, from Shakespeare.
Okay, but mm-hmm. then it's a GI is government issue.
That's right, uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Some would say a general idiot too, you know.
Say what? A general idiot? Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're privately owned. That's what it means. You're no longer a member of the rest of the people, you're a private. You start as a private. You're owned, body and soul. You do what you're told. You're owned. That's what it means. You don't have any rights at all that the general population may have, even in common law. You're now privately owned by the corporation. Yeah. So you start as a private. Yeah. So that's where that comes from. That Britain was so used to the dragoons and all the other big regiments being turned loose on the public that you did not worship the military as they were trained eventually. Again, only in the 20th century to worship the military in America.
And, you know, you still see cars driving around here mm-hmm. with those little China-made American U.S. flags on it.
Mm-hmm.
And people hang them out in front of their homes.
Uh-huh.
We had, you know, that used to... I've got a huge, tall flagpole across the road, which I brought from Illinois.
Yeah.
I was the same way. That flag, Old Glory, I loved it, Alan, because it meant so many things to me that were such lies.
Yeah.
But the big laugh, the big joke on the American people after 9/11,
mm-hmm.
and they were selling those little flags, millions of them. And they came from China.
Yeah.
China made. And in case any new listeners that might not have heard this or thought about it, but it isn't an American flag.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. When that flag was it during the Revolution?
Yeah.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner still wave.
Mm-hmm.
The bombs bursting in air. It's a war flag. It's a military. It's a U.S. government incorporated flag.
It's actually deeper than that because it's a Masonic Kabbalistic flag. And you see that the first revolution in England, and the English flag became the Union Jack for Jacob. You know, Jack is also a Levi, a lever. You jack things up. So
yeah.
You're a priest. And, of course, you have the illumined man, the X, over the Templar cross. And so it's an eight-pointed, you see, eight's power and money. That's what it means in Masonry. And it's red, white, and blue. And it's red for fire and revolution and blood. And it's also white for spirit. And of course, the blue is the closest up from black, which is law, according to the Kabbalistic system. The next one in red, white, and blue is America. And, of course, Canada was the same with the Union Jack. It's changed now. But then the next one was France, which became red, white, and blue. So that's their revolutionary colors, really. Yeah.
Well, somebody said that the U.S. flag was taken from the British East...
India Company.
East India Company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had that... It's on a famous... There's a famous building in Hong Kong, the Palisade, and in there, I don't know if it's still there, but they had an actual original East India Company flag, and it was like the early American one where you had a circle, America had a circle of 13 stars for the colonies, and 13, of course, is revolution and regeneration, you see, in Masonry. That's why they waited till the 13.
Well, I guess Betsy Ross made their flag too, huh?
Yeah, and then they had the stars and the stripes and going across the way. So that was the East India Company's flag, yeah.
And of course, it was just coincidence that there were 13 colonies at that time.
Yeah, right.
Karen.
And what gets me too, you see, is that they'd already had international meetings in Europe as to who was going to bring in the next part of the system for empire. And they couldn't use any of the existing countries because they were all known by the rest of the world that was not yet invaded as being tyrants and looters for a small clique in London and in Paris and so on. And so they dreamed up the idea of a new white and shining armor that was brand new and unconnected with the rest of them. And what happened in America was about 55 of the largest wealthy landowners in America, who all had charters to own their land, by the way, from the British Crown, they had original charters from the Crown, those guys, Washington and so on. And they got together in that building, and 33 of them, of course, 33 signed their name to it. And they were all high Freemasons. And they barred the general public from coming in. And then they came out and said, we've given you a constitution, you know.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about the Con-Con.
Oh, yeah, what a joke. I mean, the general public had no input into it whatsoever. It was a Masonic meeting. Franklin talked about that quite openly. And he even see Washington with the chair behind him with the rising sun picture, but in the background.
Yep, it's there.
Yep.
It's still there at Independence Hall.
Yep. And they even barred the doors and had guards on it.
They nailed the windows shut, Alan.
That's because all temple lodges, it's called the church with no windows. When they have a lodge meeting, they must have that done, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, it's such a farce, and that's why Washington's got his big erection up there over the water. And the first new, large obelisk copied after the Egyptians over water, fire over water, that's what it stands for.
Uh-huh. They got
the male over the female, yeah.
Got the reflecting pool there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Thomas Jefferson.
Uh-huh.
And I had read in a bio of him that he had ordered an obelisk, you know, for his grave.
That's right. And most of them did, actually. And when you go across the border, if you look between the border, get off the main roads and walk along the Canadian-U.S. border, they marked it every half mile or so with a Masonic obelisk about 12 feet tall.
Oh, God.
Yeah, all along the... Because it was a Masonic arrangement between the two groups, you know. It's all Masonic. So that's the big joke. And then, of course, Franklin in his own memoirs and Jefferson both repeated the same thing, that they saw this as the beginning of a federation of the world, and they would start with the Federation of the States of America, and that would be the beginning of a federation of the world led by 12 wise men. Yeah. And that's in their own writings, which surely they must have given you at school, because that's in their own memoirs, you know.
No, they didn't give us that stuff at school.
Really?
Oh, God, no, Alan.
What did they give you, John Wayne?
They gave you dates and names and places.
Uh-huh.
It was very dry. I mean, I maybe that's why I kept falling asleep in history class.
Uh-huh.
Then after I got out of school, then I became thirsty, you know,
mm-hmm.
for actually finding out what really did happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe if there was a true hero of this country, it would have been Andrew Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. You know, George Washington, what do you call, chartered the first bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a 20-year charter.
Yeah.
And it was Andrew Jackson who refused to charter it. There's a whole book written about that. Well, yeah. I mean, that the coming battle.
Yeah.
There's a lot of information in there about, my God, what they threatened.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get the charter to that bank.
Yeah.
And then they tried to, they tried an assassination.
Uh-huh.
And I love that story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's true, but...
Well, what I do know, too, is Jackson... and this is the thing, too, that's going to happen to us. You see, they had to push the American Indians into reservations. And that's another M.O. of the same brotherhood down through the ages.
And Jackson did that?
Well, Jackson helped along that. And, of course, Jackson also they had treaties with the American Indians up in the Black Hills area. And, of course, he wanted gold. And so he started to encourage all the settlers to move in there, like, to start the wars going with the Indians. And when they brought the trains through, Jackson put ads in all the European newspapers for the big wealthy gentlemen, the sportsmen, he called them, to come over to the Americas. And they would have these train rides through the prairies there and along the Black Hills. And all the ammunition they could want, and they would feed them and so on at the taxpayers' expense. and they killed thousands and thousands and thousands of buffalo.
Oh, they almost made them extinct.
And that was to get rid of the Indians' food supply.
Oh, my God.
That was intentional, yeah. Yeah, that's what it was
for. And I take it back.
Yep.
Maybe there is no, quote, true hero of this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ones who are heroes were probably dead and never mentioned.
Yeah, the ones that were killed.
Yeah, they stand up with in protest, or maybe they went for their rights when they were put in that blacked out room making up the charter there. Maybe they came up with a protest and had their throats slit Masonically.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the history. We're living through a system which uses everybody, all the ordinary people, and they make no distinction between the peasant of America, Canada, or China. If you're not one of them in the upper nobility, you're just a peasant. You're a world peasant. And other writers, including the Russells and so on, Bertrand Russell, makes that quite plain. You know, they have no identification with the ordinary people. When you look at what Washington came out of the Revolution with, I mean, he'd added 20 odd mile of land to his property during the Revolution. He was a busy guy, you know.
Who was this?
Washington.
Oh yeah, he was. He was land rich.
Yeah.
He
added about 20 odd square miles to his property during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were looking after themselves, and they put all their Masonic symbols up, and people pass it all the time. It's in all the movies, the obelisk and the water, and there's Lincoln sitting just like a statue of one of the pharaohs in this four square position, they call it.
In his chair?
In his big chair, yeah.
Well, there's in Springfield, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
at the state capitol.
Yeah.
The big bronze statue of him sitting in his chair,
mm-hmm.
and his nose is all shiny.
Oh, it's a shiny nose, eh?
No, people come in there and they drop money into the little fountain there.
Oh, yeah.
And make a wish and rub his nose.
Oh, really?
And his nose is real pretty. You know, it's, you know how, I guess it's, is it brass or copper or?
Bronze, probably.
Bronze, yeah.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. You know how it'll begin to oxidize.
Yeah.
So his nose is real pretty.
Mm.
Because mm-hmm. that's what the people do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. As I say, the Indians were first. The settlers made real estate out of jungles and wastelands and swamps. Now it's been taken from them. They have to be put into their reservations, which are the human habitat areas of the UN. And so everybody's used in turn for the agenda. Always.
Yes.
Always. Uh-huh.
And now they refer to the U.S. as the empire.
Yes, and of course that started when Britain handed over the torch officially. And again, even going back to the 1500s, John Dee and his buddy Francis Bacon wrote about the new Atlantis arising in the West.
Yeah.
Which would continue carrying the torch. And sure enough, America took over the tax-paying part of it and the military part of it. To bring in the New World Order. Once it sinks, China is to be the policeman of the world. And that's the way the elite have formulated this plan. And they've written about it, too. Yeah.
For, in case we have any new listeners, you know, I used to get angry
mm-hmm.
when people, in fact, when I was first given the book that Ralph Borzewski wrote, The Constitution That Never Was.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't even read it, Alan.
Yeah.
I said, this is just another book that bashes our Constitution.
Yeah.
And I've quoted it heavily in Chapter 12. I wanted to, for our listeners, if you haven't read the book that's online there, on our main page at sweetliberty.org, it's called Jewish Persecution. It began as an article, and it just got away and took off on its own. But if you go to Chapter 12, it's where it did its own thing there, and then we pick it up again in Chapter 18. And if you have any doubts whatsoever about what we're talking about tonight, go read those two chapters. That just it's a real hard pill to swallow when you've been born into that, Alan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know it's very hurtful because it was just, well, look how ticked off I got at you.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't acknowledge that the Constitution was...
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even want to talk to you for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, Canada, under Pierre Trudeau, got, for the first time, it got a Charter of Rights. And it's right along the same world agenda, where there's no mention of private property ownership in the whole charter.
Wow.
And, of course, Pierre Trudeau, who became Prime Minister of Canada, who was also a Rhodes Scholar and a millionaire, because all the millionaires run the communist side, you see, the elite run communism.
Which is no different than international democracy.
Well, the same boys run both sides.
It's all one and the same plan.
It's the same families that run it, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing.
It's a dialectic of pretending you have an enemy.
Right.
Pushing the public between the two, squeezing them until we come out with the synthesis, the third way. And
rational socialism, I guess.
Yeah, you've got a fascist elite running a communistic a bureaucracy who run the people. That's the synthesis. That's it, yeah. And of course, Pierre Trudeau led the Young Communist Party of Canada, the Comintern, to Moscow in 1952. He helped with the setting up of the Charter for the United Nations with Escott Reid and Pearson and Alger Hiss. And then he became the Prime Minister of Canada, and not one newspaper mentioned that he was the leader of the Comintern for Canada, the Communist International.
Wow.
And that's because it's all one and the same thing. Capitalism and communism are two sides of the same coin.
Sides of the same coin, yes.
And guess who owns
the coin? Feeding us to the third way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the media is an essential arm of government. Without it, they couldn't give us this fake reality, you know. Yeah.
Well, besides the media, don't forget the entertainment and music industry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's essential. In fact, they had a meeting in England in the 1970s, early 70s, with the Royal Institute of International Affairs and CFR to decide which company and country would give the culture to the world, the coming world, the new world, and they decided that Hollywood would be the culture creator.
There we go.
For the world, yeah.
We just got our 1 minute warning here.
Uh-huh.
So is there anything that you want to say in about 40 seconds?
Yes, it's not over yet till the fat lady sings.
Thank you, Alan.
Yep.
It ain't till the fat lady sings.
Yep.
That is for sure. And this has been going on down through the ages.
Yep.
And they're still at it, and we're still here.
We are.
So there you go. Thank you for that. What a wonderful final statement for this broadcast. Folks, we'll see you back Wednesday night next, and be sure to tune in Monday and Tuesday for Darren Week on Sweet Liberty. And thank you for being here, folks. Good night, Alan. Thanks, honey.
Good night.
Good night.
Most Americans want our government to control our borders, especially since 9/11. But amazingly, some political leaders want to do away with borders entirely, whether the American people agree or not. And they have a serious plan for accomplishing their aims while deceiving the public. It's called the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, a huge power.